Shrimadis Devangrata Esi Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Shri Prabhupada Ki, Iskan Founder Acharya Shri Prabhupada Ki, Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki, Namacharya Shri Haridas Thakur Ki, Vensei Gaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Garadhar Shivas Arigaur Bhaktivedanta Ki, Shishi Radha Krishna Go Gopu Gopinashyam Radha Kunigiri Gopitana Ki, Shri Vrindavan Thama Ki, Shri Mayapur Thama Ki, Ganga Mayaki, Jamuna Mayaki, Bhakti Rediki, Tulasi Dediki, Samaveta Bhakti Vrindiki, Jai Nitai Gaur. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Sri. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Tad asma sharam Ridayam Patedam Yad Grihant Grihyamane Hari Nama Heyayi Na Vikriyetata Yada Vikvikaro Netre Jalam Gatra Ruheshu Arasha Tarasmasharam Hidayam Bhatedam Yadgrihyamane Harinamadheyahi Navikriyeta Yatado Vikaro Tre jalam gatra ruheshu harsha Tarasmasharam hridayam bhateram Yad grihyamane harinamadheyahi Navikriyeta tathayada vikaro Tre jalam gatra ruheshu harsha Tarasmasharam hridayam bhateram Yad grihyamane harinamadheyahi Navikriyeta tathayada vikaro Tre jalam gatra ruheshu harsha
Thank you. tat
that
asmasaram is steel frame, hridayam heart, vata idam certainly that, yat which, grihyamanaihi in spite of chanting, harinama the holy name of the Lord, heyaihi by concentration of the mind, na does not, vikriyeta change, ata thus, yada when, vikara reaction, netre in the eyes, jalam tears, gatra ruheshu at the pores, harsha eruptions of ecstasy. Translation. Certainly that heart is steel framed, which, in spite of one's chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration, does not change when ecstasy takes place. Tears fill the eyes, and hairs stand on end. Purport. Interesting to note that it says here, does not change when ecstasy takes place. I always was thinking of this verse as the heart's steel framed when you chant and ecstasy doesn't happen. But it's saying when ecstasy happens, if the heart doesn't change after that, that must steel frame. So the holy name will create ecstasy despite one's platform. Then when that happens, you should change. Interesting. Purport. We should note with profit that in the first three chapters of the second canto, a gradual process of development of devotional service is being presented. In the first chapter, the first step in devotional service for God consciousness by the process of hearing and chanting has been stressed, and a gross conception of the personality of Godhead in his universal form for the beginners is recommended. By such a gross conception of God through the material manifestations of his energy, one is enabled to spiritualize the mind and the senses and gradually concentrate the mind upon Lord Vishnu, the Supreme, who is present as the Supersoul in every heart and everywhere, in every atom of the material universe. The system of Panchupasana, recommending five mental attitudes for the common man, is also enacted for this purpose, namely, gradual development, worship of the superior that may be in the form of fire, electricity, the sun, the mass of living beings, Lord Shiva, and at last, the impersonal Supersoul, the partial representative of Lord Vishnu. They are all nicely described in the second canto, but in the second chapter. But in the third chapter, further development is prescribed after one has actually reached the stage of Vishnu worship, or pure devotional service. And the mature stage of Vishnu worship is suggested herein in relation to the change of heart. The whole process of spiritual culture is aimed at changing the heart of the living being in the matter of his eternal relation with the Supreme Lord as subordinate servant, which is his eternal constitutional position. So with the progress of devotional service, the reaction of change in the heart is exhibited by gradual detachment from the sense of material enjoyment by a false sense of lording it over the world and an increase of the attitude of rendering loving service to the Lord. Vaidhi bhakti, or regulated devotional service by the limbs of the body, namely the eyes, the ears, the nose, the hands, and the legs, as already explained herein before, is now stressed herein in relation to the mind, which is the impetus for all activities of the limbs of the body. It is expected by all means that by discharging regulated devotional service, one must manifest the change of heart. If there is no such change, the heart must be considered steel framed, for it is not melted even when there is chanting of the holy name of the Lord. We must always remember that hearing and chanting are the basic principles of discharging devotional duties. And if they are properly performed, there will follow the reactional ecstasy with signs of tears in the eyes and standing in the hairs of the body. These are natural consequences and are the preliminary symptoms of the bhava stage, which occurs before one reaches the perfectional stage of prema, love of Godhead. If the reaction does not take place, even after continuous hearing and chanting the holy name of the Lord, it may be considered to be due to offenses only. That is the opinion of the Sandarbha. In the beginning of the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, if the devotee has not been very careful about evading the 10 kinds of offenses at the feet of the holy name, certainly the reaction of feelings of separation will not be visible by tears in the eyes and standing in the hair on end. The bhava stage is manifested by 8 transcendental symptoms, namely inertness, perspiration, standing of hairs on end, failing in the voice, trembling, paleness of the body, tears in the eyes, and finally, trance. The Nectar Devotion, a summary study of Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, explains those symptoms and vividly describes other transcendental developments, both in steady and accelerated manifestations. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has very critically discussed all these bhava displays in connection with some unscrupulous neophytes imitating the above symptoms for cheap appreciation. Not only Vishwanath Chakravarti, but also Srila Rupa Goswami treated them very critically. Sometimes all the above 8 symptoms of ecstasy are imitated by the mundane devotees, Prakriti Sahajiyas. But the pseudo-symptoms are at once detected when one sees the pseudo-devotee addicted to so many forbidden things. Even though decorated with the signs of a devotee, a person addicted to smoking, drinking, or illegitimate sex with women cannot have all the above-mentioned ecstatic symptoms. But it is seen that sometimes these symptoms are willfully imitated. And for this reason, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti accuses the imitators of being stone-hearted men. They are sometimes even affected by the reflection of such transcendental symptoms. Yet, if they still do not give up their forbidden habits, when they are then they are hopeless cases for transcendental realization. When Lord Chaitanya met Srila Ramananda Rai of Kavaur on the bank of the Godavari, the Lord developed all these symptoms. But because of the presence of some non-devotee brahmanas who were attendants of the Rai, the Lord suppressed these symptoms. So sometimes they are not visible even in the body of the first-class devotee for certain circumstantial reasons. Therefore, real, steady bhava is definitely displayed in the matter of cessation of material desires, shanti, utilization of every moment in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, avyartha, kalatvam, eagerness for glorifying the Lord constantly, namagane sadaa ruchi, attraction for living in the land of the Lord, pratisthad vasati sthale, complete detachment from material happiness, virakti, and pridelessness, mana shunyata. One who has developed all these transcendental qualities is really possessed of the bhava stage, as distinguished from the stone-hearted imitator or mundane devotee. The whole process can be summarized as follows. The advanced devotee who chants the holy name of the Lord in a perfectly offenseless manner and is friendly to everyone can actually relish the transcendental taste of glorifying the Lord. And the result of such realization is reflected in the cessation of all material desires, etc., as mentioned above. The neophytes, due to their being in the lower stage of devotional service, are invariably envious, so much so that they invent their own ways and means of devotional regulations without following the acharyas. As such, even if they make a show of constantly chanting the holy name of the Lord, they cannot relish the transcendental taste of the holy name. Therefore, the show of tears in the eyes, trembling, perspiration, or unconsciousness, etc., is condemned. They can, however, get in touch with the pure devotee of the Lord and rectify their bad habits. Otherwise, they shall continue to be stone-hearted and unfit for any treatment. A complete progressive march on the return back home, back to Godhead, will depend on the instructions of the revealed scriptures directed by a realized devotee. So Prabhupada here is showing the giving a essential like synopsis of the first three chapters here. Pointing out that the process of devotional service is established and connecting oneself to the Lord through connecting one's material needs and activities, but coming to the platform here of understanding that that pure chanting the holy name, that's the main focus. Right? So then he's bringing out the point that changing the heart is what one is trying to do. At present, then, we are absorbed in, basically our mundane concept of ourselves. And we're trying to change that I am servant to the Lord. Theoretically, we all accept that's where we're sitting here. But as far as realization, that takes some time, that takes practice. So to that degree we practice, to that degree we'll have realization in some aspect of devotional service. And then from there it continues. So here the bringing out that the hearing and chanting is the essential points of the devotional service. Like that. But in that essence, all these other aspects are then filled in around it. It's a very important approach here. We were discussing the other day. The intellectual approach is that you give the point first, then you fill around it. That's panchanganyaya. That first you make your statement of purpose, what it is exactly you want to say. Then you expand that, so that those who are the association can appreciate it, understand it, apply it, these things. That's what's happening, what's going on. So that's the first thing, because this is intelligence. The mind means you start with the mind first. You start with the field. You establish the relationships. Having established the relationships, then you make your point that you want to do. Does this make sense? It's two different approaches. Intelligence means you make the point, then you apply it. The mind means you start with the field of application, then you get to the point you want to apply. Right? It's two different approaches. Both are valid, but depending on the situation. But here, they're making the point, so first is making that the holy name is the process, then you're connecting everything around you. But it must be always considered that chanting is the essence. That's the focal point. So now then, if this reaction does not take place, means by the reaction of developing that appreciation, developing that attraction, that attachment to the holy name, these transcendental symptoms, then it's understood that the heart is very hard. Right? It's steel framed. Because if something's in a steel frame, it keeps very nicely, right? So here it is kept so nicely that it's not reacting to the devotional process. So then it's mentioning that these are the preliminary aspects of Baba, right? So this is, sometimes you may think that this is Baba. No, this is the preliminary. Baba is the mood of that affection for Krishna. It's the budding stage of prema. So all these things then we see are nicely described, that this is the standard. This is the same thing in the Panchanganyaya. Is that we're making the point that this kind of chanting, this kind of reaction to the chanting, this is standard. This is normal. This is what's expected. This is what's desired. But a doubt may arise that what about people who feign these things? So then we get into explaining that. So when you're removing doubts, that third part of the logic is generally the bigger picture. I mean, by volume, right? It's important to note this. Because how much time does Prabhupada spend saying a point? You know, like here, that the devotional service is the main, the chanting the holy name is the main. It's very short, right? Then from that you can understand that by the symptoms of transcendental ecstasy. Right? Now to remove doubts, what people are thinking, feeling, and all this that may distract them from that, that is your lengthy thing. That you give examples, you get into detail, you get into application, how it should be applied, not applied. Does that make sense? Then we come back to, we see here at the end of the purport, then again Prabhupada is summarizing, bringing it all to the point. Right. Does this make some sense? So sometimes we have to be careful we don't mistake a essential point because of volume. Right? This is a common mistake because anytime people perform an activity for results, right? But we always have to look at what is the result. Right? What is the result? So sometimes we think it's volume. Right? Because in the volume, you'll find your result. Right? But the volume isn't actually what you're looking for. Does that make sense? Someone is performing a business activity. That gives them a volume of turnover. But that volume is not, you want the volume because from the volume you can get the profit. But the profit is what you want. The profit is small compared to the volume. Does that make sense? So sometimes we get distracted by the volume and forget about the profit. Does that make sense? So because in the volume of discussion, that Prabhupada is trying to establish the point by showing application, by showing what's incorrect, what's improper understandings, sometimes we miss the essential point. Does that make sense? Right? So in this way, sometimes very essential points in Krishna consciousness are lost because of this. Because we see here is that so much time is spent trying to remove those who are improperly following. And because that's coming later, we might think that this is more important. But does that make sense? But when we're using intelligence, it's what comes first that's important. And then what you're filling based on what that point. Does that make sense? Well, with the mind, you create the field, and then after everything's there, and you see everybody's okay, and nobody's flinching or making faces, then you say what you want to say, and that comes after. Does that make sense? So not being so much trained in the process of the intellect, then we tend to use the others, what comes last. Does that make sense? Like that. Of course. The conclusion is at the end, but we will get distracted by the middle. Right? So, what I mean here, distracted, one may say, but that's also important information. Yes, it's important, but its importance is because it's expanding what's been said in the beginning. Right? And then having expanded that, then you'll again take that essence out and then present that. Right? You make your capital investment, you make your point for profit, you make your volume of turnover. Then from that you're going to again extract your profit. Does that make sense? So we have to understand how the scriptures function, how it works like that. Because many times it'll be said, oh, we don't worry about Vedic literature, we only care what Prabhupada says, we only do what Prabhupada says. You know, we're like this. So which is good. That's very good mentality, chaste and all that. But the point that's being missed is Prabhupada himself states he only does what's Vedic. Right? So therefore, one could say, we only follow the Vedic culture as Srila Prabhupada has given it to us. That we can say. But to say, we only follow Prabhupada, we don't care for anything else, if that means that I only know Prabhupada, so that's all I know, that's great. But if it's, I only know Prabhupada because I don't want to know anything else because the modern kind of like conflicts with my, I mean the means of the Vedic conflicts with my modern, you know? Because generally the person that says, I only care for Prabhupada, you'll find that they're very modern or very contemporary in their world view. And what they use for inspiration is always modern. Right? There's very few that say, I only care for Prabhupada, and that's all there is. Those persons who say that, very simple lifestyle, don't really get into anything. They're not involved in anything else other than just studying, hearing, chanting. There are devotees like that. But generally you find very sophisticated persons saying, oh, I only care for Prabhupada, but then somehow they also care very much for the modern concept. So that's not balanced. Because Prabhupada cared for the Vedic. His Vedic is coming from Krishna. Right? This is important. So we see here is why we're saying that, is we're pointing out that Srila Prabhupada very chastely follows the Vedic principle of making your statement and then expanding it. And why we're bringing this up is sometimes in that expansion we miss the main point. You know? Like a very typical one, probably comes to my mind as the most typical one, is Prabhupada's discussions on varnashram. It's a side point, but it's just the example. Prabhupada will start out by saying human life begins with varnashram, and human life is meant to go back to Godhead. So he's recommending being human. He always tries to steer us away from animal life. But because the varnashram system being what it is, it can so easily be misunderstood or misjudged and be misapplied. I mean, it's just taking that out like the smartest. You know, just like here we're talking about bhava and stuff. The sahajas make trouble with that. So we spend a lot of time talking about them. So in the same way, because varnashram can be misapplied, then the misapplication of the smartest or other persons who are using it for their own purposes is rejected. And you'll generally find in many purports, that's the bulk of the presentation. So I've heard it myself. The conclusion of devotees is Prabhupada's throwing out and doesn't care for varnashram. But this means one doesn't understand the Vedic principles of logical presentation that Prabhupada's using. Otherwise, he's making this statement, then he's expanding on that. He's removing doubt. It means if you make your statement, you have to remove doubt. So the doubt is misapplied varnashram. Or in this case, misapplied transcendental ecstasy. Right? Then once that's there, then you go back to what you want to say. This makes some sense. So it's just trying so that we get a glimmer of how Prabhupada and the Acharyas present the philosophy. Right? That's there. You're talking about, you see here, you just make the point. Right? That's there. And then you expand. If you're presenting a lila, then you'll see it's the opposite. First you present the place, right? If it's dhyana, you're doing deity worship. First, the dham is explained, right? Divya Vrindaranya, right? In Vrindavan, transcendental realm of Vrindavan. Right? Divya Vrindaranya, Kalpadrumara. Then in Vrindavan, there is the Kalpa Vriksha tree. Then, after that? Yeah. Then is the jewel encrusted, under the tree is the jewel encrusted throne. Then, Sri Sri Radha Srila Govinda Deva. Then is sitting Radha and Krishna. Right? Krishnalabhi Sevimana Smarani. Then what's coming to them, then expanding from them, then you have their association. Right? You understand that? Because this is dhyana, it's for the mind. So that's how the mind works. You set the situation. Then once you're comfortable with the situation and you know what you're doing, then you can focus. But the intelligence doesn't worry about it. It just field is what it just analyzes. You give a field, it immediately goes, I either break it up into pieces or I start finding common pieces and putting it together. Right? So you have to have something you're going to start with. Am I breaking it up or am I putting it together? Right? So that's what you have to do. So first you have to know what it is you're dealing with. Then you deal with the field. Right? Well, the mind is accepting and rejecting, so the first thing you do is, what is the field that I'm going to accept from or reject? Does this make some sense? Yeah. Like that. So we see here then Srila Prabhupada is very nicely explaining this and also application that these transcendental symptoms aren't to be manifest in public. Lord Chaitanya is there with Ramananda Rai and some very qualified Brahmins, but they weren't devotees. Right? So then he doesn't manifest these things. It's not done. Right? It's just not. And we even see is that following example of Srila Rupa Goswami, then he also never manifests transcendental symptoms of ecstasy. It's just you don't hear of it. It's very rare you ever hear of the acharyas manifesting such symptoms. So it's something that is there, it's experienced, but it's not manifest. Does that make sense? So that's explained also the practical application. So then this chanting should be the focus that by hearing and chanting, then with that focus on the name as Krishna, then the heart becomes affected by that, becomes changed, becomes benefited by this. You know, Prabhupada's opening this point with here, should note with profit, right, is that this devotional process of chanting the holy name is what's being given here. The whole process of spiritual culture is aimed at changing the heart of the living entity in the matter of its eternal relation with the Supreme Lord as subordinate servant. So this is what one's trying to do. One's trying to change the mentality that I am servant. So we know we're servant, but we have to act and feel like we're servant. Right? To theoretically know something that's important, that starts there, but it has to be, we feel like that in everything we do. Everything, every application of our devotional life, are we feeling as servant? Is it being done in the mood to please Krishna as his servant? If it is, then we will find all these symptoms manifest here, then of the external symptoms of ecstasy, meaning the, how do you say, Prabhupada uses this, qualities. Ah, here it is. So important to note that the transcendental symptoms are only fully manifest as someone who has the transcendental qualities. Right? He gives these five qualities, mentioned in the opening of Nectar Devotion. Utilizing every moment in the Lord's service, eagerness for glorifying the Lord, attraction to the living in the Lord's place, complete detachment from material enjoyment, pridelessness and steady. Oh no. Yes, cessation of material desire. So that's the important thing. One may think, okay, in this, then maybe the transcendental ecstasy is the important element. But actually, it's development of these qualities. If these were there, the others would be there. But without these five being manifest, then the transcendental symptoms of ecstasy will not be fully manifest. Sometimes you may get a little bit of one, a little bit of another. But we're talking about all of them happening at once. Like that. So then you know it's going on, right? If a little bit happens, just a touch, we feel so inspired. But if they all happen at once, then, you know, that's on another platform, right? So that's what we're talking about. So that happens when these five qualities are gained. So that's our focus, right? We don't sit there and just chant, and then we focus that Are we removing these? Are we removing material desire? Are we becoming steady in our devotional service? Do we appreciate living in the Lord's place? Are we developing pridelessness? You know, these are, that will then increase the proper effect. So then the essence that Prabhupada gives is then its conclusion. The whole process can be summarized as is the fourth stage of logic. The whole process can be summarized as follows. The advanced devotee who chants the holy name of the Lord in a perfectly offenseless manner and is friendly to everyone can actually relish the transcendental taste of glorifying the Lord. Right, so that's the thing, this offenseless chanting in the association of the devotee and is friendly to everyone. It's very important. Even in the Dharma Shastra, it's said, a real Brahman is one who is friendly to all. That one is, he is situated on the Brahman platform. Because a Brahman means one, Brahman means one who knows Brahman. So someone who is a friend of everyone, they are actually Brahman. So here the devotee is the perfect Brahman, so naturally he is absorbed in the Lord and is friendly to everyone. And then the final conclusion is of this development of this transcendental platform. So here Prabhupada's given the process there. Now the conclusion is the complete progressive march on the return back home, back to Godhead, will depend on the instructions of the revealed scriptures directed by a realized devotee. So following the instructions of the pure devotee in relation as given from the revealed scriptures, that's what's going to get everything else. That's the essence. Questions on this? Comments? Yes,
ma'am.
You could be a neophyte devotee and not be a human being. That is one of the great glories of devotional service. Is that we see in the fifth canto that I'm not sure which dweep it is, but the vanaras, which are animals, they're talking about how devotional service is so perfect that even though they're animals, they speak rough, they act rough, they're gross, you know, then they're able to take up devotional service like that. So here we could look at it from two angles. From the intellectual platform, then anybody who takes up devotional service then is the best of human beings. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says you have a crowd of people. The one in the crowd who says Hare Krishna, he's the best in the crowd. Everybody else is not less than best. So in this way, they're the, they're the perfect human being. Can't get better than that. A devotee. At the same time, you could say culturally, they are acting not on the human platform. Like that. So that's the point of the Prakriti. Devotee may have that weakness. He may act very much as a human being and not as a devotee. Or he may act as a not as a human being, but still has the devotional. So either of these, depending upon whether his conditioning is pious or impious. You know, it's just like the Hindus, their problem is they're too human and they won't take up devotional service. You know, human life is too nice and they just can't get down to actually taking up devotional service. And the Westerners have the opposite problem. They're, you know, they're very developed, sophisticated tribals. And because of that, they kind of get devotional service. I mean, the Vaidhi Bhakti that helps, enhances devotional service sometimes is a trouble for them. Right? But intellectually, they'll focus. So we see here the importance of the intelligence, because the Westerners are coming into it from the intelligent platform. The mind hasn't necessarily fully absorbed it yet. So the culture that hasn't come. But you can ask any devotee, And basically it's guaranteed you're going to get the right philosophical answer, who they are, who's God, and why they're taking up devotional service. It's very clear, very succinct, very exact. Because they've joined because of intelligence. Right? Well, you find, but the weaknesses is then making that intelligence hit the ground. Because they're not able to, somehow they don't see the connection between the intelligence and the mind, or understand the mind, or the culture is connected with the mind. So that gets left out. You know, so the mind becomes a bit spontaneous, but it's not working in the framework of intelligence as given by the scriptures. The opposite, you see, then the Hindus are very nicely situated in the mind. They follow the culture, that they're very sweet, nice people. But they don't apply their intelligence, you know, other than business, of course, but they don't apply the intelligence. So they're not able to focus on the philosophy. So therefore, if you ask them what is the essence, then, you know, prepare yourself for a very long, lengthy, emotionally charged answer that gets nowhere. Like that. So, that's the weakness, you know, on both parties. So if that's understood, therefore there can be a combination here. You had a question? Does that make some sense? Like that. But that's the beauty of devotional service, is even if one's not, you know, a human being by culture, the process still works. But the process is actually designed for humans, because Radha and Krishna and their friends are all humans. You know, so that's, it's highly recommended one gets to that platform, yes. So you could take the essence of it here, this is the point, who is friendly to everyone. Because if you're friendly to everyone, then naturally you're going to follow all the etiquettes that are there in a human being. And you're going to, because you're friendly to everyone, that means you're all automatically going to be friendly to cows, Brahmins, women, old men, and children. So then you'll qualify yourself as human. You know what I'm saying? So that means without getting too absorbed in the external aspects of varnashram, the essence is there, is that one is friendly to everyone. So being friendly to everyone means you respect everyone. You're considerate of everyone. And that, so that's all varnashram is trying to do. It's trying to let you know who you are and who everybody else is and what's your relationship. But it's what it's actually trying to do is tell you who is God, who are you, and who are the devotees, and what are your relationship, right? And the material energy. That's what it's trying to tell you. But because most people aren't interested in God, then it's brought the presentation, the focus of it is from the material social platform. Does that make sense? But the actual opening of the Dharma Shastra is the sages are asking Brahma to explain the spiritual culture of varnashram in relationship to the Lord. That's how it opens. Then he gives it all detail how you can apply it in every aspect of day-to-day life. Does that make any sense there? Right? So the essence of that basically is that one is performing activities under the direction of the advanced devotee, according to scripture, with non-violence, means, you know, in other words, you're dealing with every living entity appropriately, according to who you are and who they are. And you're not unnecessarily trying to act out of your boundaries and take what is not yours. Right? And the senses are controlled and engaged in an uplifting manner. You could actually say that's the essence of varnashram, but you could also say that's the process of devotional service. Does that make sense? Yes.
What's your view about how the other varnashram can be
What is our view on how Varnashram being produced? I mean, I say the question's good, but unfortunately, I don't think my opinion is much important. Because Prabhupada always talks about that individual opinion is not what's important. It's what's the opinion of the acharyas given by scripture. So, as we were mentioning before, the essence is what's important. Everything expands from the essence. So the essential point, and we see here as Baba's talking about Baba, but he's saying it's not going to happen without, how do you say, qualities. And so these qualities are important. So then, pridelessness here. When there's pride, there's violence. Because it comes out of, violence comes out of envy. Envy comes out of we're not the Lord's servant. Right? We want to be God. So that creates envy, which creates violence. It means we're acting, one, against the nature of the soul, so we're killing the soul. And because of this, we want to be God. And we're not, then we don't apply things properly, so therefore we overstep our boundaries in the culture, and therefore all our dealings with other people tend to actually be not for their benefit. It's not a feeling of service. Does that make sense? So that's given by Manu. That's given here by Rupa Goswami as the quality of mana shunyata, of the perfectional qualities needed to develop prema. Understand? So if you check, you'll see that all these five, it's one field. It's just how it's interpreted, right? You take a knife and you interpret it in the kitchen, then it's applied how you use it in cutting your vegetables and how you hold your fingers and stuff like that, the ways you can use it like that. If you're taking the knife and using it for some other field, let's say to make a mudanga, you don't take the straps of mudanga and sit there and chop them very finely. You hold it completely different for cutting. Right? If you're using the knife for fighting, then again, there'll be a difference. So one could think that these three fields of application of the knife are completely different, have no connection, and it's very confusing, and one says you hold it this way, the other one says you hold it that way, the other one says, with the blade facing you, the other one says you do the same thing but turn the blade away and face it away from you. What are you supposed to do? Does that make sense? But the principle is the knife cuts. So you want to cut something, you use a knife. So you want to cut something in your kitchen, you use a knife. You want to cut something when you're using leather, you use a knife. You want to cut something in fighting, you use a knife. Does that make sense? So that is the point where we're talking about in the class, is that getting to the essence of what's the principle, then everything else expands. Because once you understand the principle, then you see, oh, the details apply here. Because we have to give some example of some detail to get it across. Right? So if we want to say, follow a recipe. Okay, so there's a recipe for cooking, there's a recipe for management, there's a recipe for disaster, there's so many recipes. Right? So then, in this, then being able to follow a recipe, then that's the point, is that there's something given that works. You follow this process, you get a result. Does that make sense? But this application is going to be so you simply have to give one example. It could be in any field. So generally you give an example appropriate for the audience. If one doesn't work, then you give another, or if it brings up a doubt, then you give more examples to clear the doubt. But you can't give all the examples there are in the universe, right? I mean, Arjuna is the closest one to see all the answers in the universe, all the questions, all the answers, right? In the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, but it was a bit unnerving, right? So to get everything at once is trouble. So therefore, then generally the recommended process is give one at a time. Does that make sense? So In that then, we are getting to your question, is that the point is that if we take the essence of what is the Varnashram system, then we can apply it. Does that make sense? Means, in the Varnashram, let's take for example, the Varnashram system gives many rules on how to respect others. Right? How you respect the teacher, what does that look like? You don't mimic him when he's in a way where he can see you, you don't sit in properly. You don't speak things that he can't hear. You don't dress or talk or act more than what he does. You know? Does that make sense? Then, like this, where you sit, you don't sit in an equal place with them. You know, when they come into the room, you stand up. You don't study things that they don't tell you to. You don't start the study until they say, you don't end the study until they say stop. Does that make sense? So, these are all details, and there's so many more. And this is just with the teacher. Then you have with the mother, with the father, with the king, with, you know, women, with children, with, does that make sense? Like that. So, like that, then there's hundreds and hundreds of pages explaining these principles. But now, if you do not know what is respect, or don't value respect, or don't practice respect, they'll all be useless. Does that make sense? Because one, you won't do them, you'll bring out, you'll drag out and open up your I'm pragmatic trunk and pull out all your nice, what do you call it, that, you know, all the items that are, I would say, probably another, all your expediencies and all that. I'm not sure that it's not, the pragmatic trunk's not another name for Pandora's box, but, you know, something, it's, there's some similarity, because in doing it, it's how to get it done without worrying about any culture or character other than what I value. Anything out of what I value, make a bridge and get over it. You know what I'm saying? Like that. It's just, you're wrong, get it together. So my keyhole perception is the ultimate interpretation of every action, thought, and deed in the universe. And that's called pragmatism. Like that. So a very, economically it can be quite good as long as you're very determined. It means the more materialistic you are, for the better you can be. But, you know, even if you just know the technique, you can do well. But other than economic development, the problem is because it doesn't function on relationships necessarily, unless you apply it there, then you're going to have a lot of money that you're not going to have anyone to share it with. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point we're making is the qualities that are there inherently in devotional service, those qualities have to be applied both in the devotional process and in the process of Varnashram. Then it will work. Because devotees will say they tried Varnashram and it didn't work, and therefore in their pragmatism have rejected it. But unfortunately, now this would be where you can take it with a grain of salt. In my opinion, I will say they never tried Varnashram. Those who say they tried it, it didn't work, or rejected it, means they didn't try it. Because if you tried it right, it works. Otherwise, why are intelligent persons like Brahma and Shiva and Indra and Kuvera and Yamaraj and, you know, Bayu, everybody who runs the universe, in fact, even people like Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, Ravana. Ravana was like perfect Brahma. You know? I mean, when he chanted, the mantras, the way he chanted them are so perfect. His ritual of performing the yajna is so perfect. His ingredients, everything, that Agni himself would always feel like personally going and coming out of the fire to accept the Purnahuti. He was so impressed. Like that. You know. So even the demons because they're following, they're, you know, they're humans, but demons. They know Varnashram is the way to get things done. But unfortunately, within the universe of following Varnashram, then there's the Bhumandala, and on Bhumandala you got seven islands, six of them follow Varnashram, and on this one small corner of the universe they don't have a tendency to in this age. And they somehow got a claim it doesn't work, though the whole management of the whole universal affairs is based on it. So it does work, it's just a matter of knowing how to apply it. But the point is the essence is the point. You get the essence that you can apply whether you're following the external form or not. You know what I'm saying? In other words, another way of taking it is you take the third verse of Shukshastakam. You apply all those principles in the third verse, you can make Varnashram work. You can't apply that, you won't be able to. You can't be humble, you can't be tolerant, you can't respect others, and you can't function in a way that you're not acting to be respected. Right? And you're not interested in transcendence, you won't be able to get Varnashram to work. Does that make some sense? So that would be, it means it's not that we need to move out to the farms or get more cows or get rid of the tractors or it's none of that. That's a detail of, does that make sense? Okay, let me just give an example here. The boy gives the girl a bunch of long-stemmed roses. That's because there's affection. If the affection wasn't there, does the roses have any meaning? Does the girl care if she gets those roses with a big crocodile grin? No. That's my point. So therefore, the externals are good because they're given by God. But my point is you won't get the result you want unless the attitude is right. If the attitude is not right, it won't work. You can understand it from the point of like Vaidhi Bhakti. It's mentioned here that Vaidhi Bhakti means engaging the senses. So you could, but it doesn't mean the heart has been caught. The intelligence has been caught and you engage the senses. So you have the intelligence, you have the mind, you have the senses. And the intelligence also connects the senses. So the mind's in the middle, right? So it's kind of like the sandwich. So between the intelligence and the senses engaged in Lord's service, then you're bound to catch the mind. So if that's understood, then you can go, okay, we don't have the qualities to operate this Varnashram, but we have to do something to develop it through, right? So therefore, I will apply the externals of the Varnashram, but knowing that until I have the attitude, there may be some disruptions, right? And I don't identify the disruptions with the application of Varnashram. I identify the disruptions with my inappropriate consciousness and character and qualities. Does that make sense? Then, according to your ability and according to your facility, then you apply the form of it. Does that make sense?
As a parent.
How to train your child in Varnashram.
Let's say he's not around. Let's say the child is not around because there's different things, then what to do? Then because that's my point.
Okay. Okay, if they're not a Brahmin, what to do? Okay, so that might be a little bit more of a longer answer. So it's probably better we officially end the class, and then we'll continue discussing that for whoever would be interested to hear. Is that okay? Okay. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jayanatai Gaurudha Painara ki.
So you don't get confused, because like the opening is always important and the ending is important.
Mm-hmm. Okay, okay, very good point. Okay, a point was just brought up, that so we don't get confused in the application of the Panchanga Nyaya, of, you know, that the song statement of purpose is there, which is like one sentence. Like you see, Prabhupada's, these conclusions are always one sentence, or any of his opening statements are one sentence. You don't get disturbed by the volume of it, then there's what's called the Tatparya Lingas, which are six aspects of Mimamsa that are, you know that this is what is the point. Right? Because you, in other words, to keep the focus on the point, therefore how it opens, which is the opening statement we said, how it closes, and the comparison of that, then also what's repeated, like we see constantly he's repeating this point of chanting and getting the result of ecstasy, like that. So that's important. What's glorified, so the holy name, the transcendental position, the devotees, all that's important. Does that make sense? So through this, then you can understand what is important, even despite the volume of presentation that is. Thank Subhakshana Ji for that notable note. Okay, so then in applying the Varnashram in the family, how to prepare children that are not brahminical. So it's interesting to note that in the delineation of the details of Varna and Ashram, that when it comes to Varna, then it very clearly defines the occupational duties by which they will create their economic basis for a Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. And though that they're interrelated, they're different. Right? They overlap, but they're different. Some aspects are common, means giving in charity, studying the scriptures, performing sacrifice, that's common to all. But performing sacrifice for others, teaching the scripture for others, receiving charity, that's only for the Brahmins. So the Kshatriya then by the might of their arms, they will protect people, and from that they will then take the authorized tax. The Vaishya then, through his endeavors, will create economic development by either dealing with cows, land, trade, or banking. Then, and the Shudras will assist, because economics is happening with these other three, the Shudras will assist the other three in doing theirs, and that will be the basis of their maintenance. Does that make sense? So that's very clear. And Vaishya and Shudra, that definition that I've just given, they give a little bit more definition of that. It takes up, I would say, 2 pages out of about 400 in Mani. And Vaishyas and Shudras, that's it. It'll get into detail all the things that Vaishya should know for their field. You know, they should know the value of things, they should know transport, they should know jewels, they should know what labor, you know, so if the person is going to come and do this for me, what is actually can be done, they should know languages, they should know the qualities of all these materials. If you don't know the quality, how do you know how to sell it, or how do you know how to keep it, or to buy it, or to, you know, how it's kept. You know, I keep cloth, okay, I've gone into a shop of a traditional you know, Vaishnava family that they've dealt in cloth. That's been their business for generations. And I asked about one piece of kind of design. They pulled out a piece of cloth that was 40 years old, in perfect condition. So unless you know how to keep cloth, cloth's not there after 40 years. You know, in your own cabinet, you come in and then you find holes in it because some bugs decided that it also thought it was a nice choice in cloth. You know, may not appreciate the fineness of the, you know, how you say, the design and all that, but it definitely appreciates the material itself. So then, they don't know all these things. So there's a long list of details of stuff they have to know. But the principle is, you start with less of an investment and you manipulate it so you end up with a profit. Right? In other words, what you've invested should be less than what you've gained. And if you understand that, you'll be successful. Then it gives all the things behind it. Does that make sense? Like that. Therefore, it's not much. Some more detail is given, say, in the Ayurveda. I think as Ayurveda tells about all the different things they should know in the way of accounting and other things, some details of it. But these are, you know, most of these are arts, so you learn these like that. Kshatriya Dharma, how to actually deal with justice and law and how to set up the administration. That will take up maybe, let's see, 6, 3. Let's take up 3 chapters. Like that. But, yeah, and then, but, so half of it, yeah. And then 5 chapters is on ashram dharma. What's a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas? Now that, interestingly enough, is the vocation of a brahmin. Right? So it's not separately defined. Ashram dharma is the varna dharma of a brahmin. Because in ashram dharma, you study the scriptures, you perform sacrifice, you give in charity, you are clean, you're respectful to others. That is the occupation of a brahmin. You understand? But it is the common culture of everybody in the varnashram system. You understand? So the point being made is there is separate economic methods for the 4 varnas, but there is not a separate culture for the 4 varnas. It's one culture, Brahminical culture. So that's why Prabhupada just talks about Brahminical culture, establishing Brahminical culture, because varnashram is Brahminical culture, but within Brahminical culture, some make money off of it as a Brahmin, and some then protect the system so it can go on. Some generate the economics so that it can work, and some assist to get all the things done. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the varnashram. Does that make sense? So that the child is not a Brahmin doesn't mean that they don't learn the whole culture of the varnashram, because that's common to everybody. I mean, I was hearing about Prabhupada talks about the one of the highly respectable Vaishya families in Calcutta, called, you know, the aristocratic families. So he'll probably call the Brahmins the nobility, the aristocracy, like that. So then, but at the same time, as all 3 are considered aristocracy, but the aristocratic then will generally mean Vaishyas. Like that. So when Prabhupada's talking about an aristocratic family, generally it means Vaishyas, but it can mean aristocracies, it means Brahma, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas also. It's overlapping. One family, they would have, you know, a big house, everybody lives in the house, and there's one common area where they all go, and where the toilets are, the bathing is there, washing clothes is there, all that kind of stuff happens in one very big, large area of the house. So this is the Vaishya family. When they come out of the toilet, They will not touch the tap to wash their hands. Someone has to turn it on for them, they'll contaminate it. We're talking Vaishnavas here. Then, when they do wash their hands, they'll pick up the bar of soap with their right hand and put it under the water, and then they'll start to turn it. So it'll, you know, soap will come off of the bar of soap. Then they'll put the left hand at a distance under that, and with that, we'll wash the hands. Once that's been done to some degree, that it's clean, then they'll take both hands and then wash the bar of soap in like that. And then they'll turn off the tap. Right? That's a Vaishnava thing. So is that, now, if I had just said that as a, how do you say, I didn't give the reference or the context, you would probably think that that's a very fanatic interpretation of Brahminical cleanliness. No?
Well, yeah, I mean, well, I think it's very nice.
Okay, it's not, no, I'm saying it's nice. So that's my point, is that the Vedic culture, the standards of cleanliness and all that are the same. It's just that because they're not doing puja during the day, therefore they don't have to worry as much about going in the bathroom with their clothes on. It means, you know, selling cloth doesn't require that you take a bath after going to the toilet. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, there. But when they come home, they'll take a bath and put on fresh clothes and then do their pujas and all these different things like that. In the morning, they'll take their bath, fresh clothes, do the puja. But in the day, it doesn't need it. Therefore, but Brahman is doing puja all day, so all day he has to be worried about not contaminating his clothes. Does that make sense? It's simply the application, but the standard of cleanliness is the same. But according to occupation, therefore you see it manifest more or less in your day. Like Maharaj Yudhishthira is on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. During the war, he gets up in the morning, he takes his bath, puts on white clothes, sits the yajna, and gives him charity to the Brahmins and everything like this, and gets their blessings and all that. And after that, then he goes and puts on the clothes suitable for warfare. So he's getting a following Brahminical culture. But he does it in a very big, elaborate way, while the Brahmin or Vaishya will maybe do it in a more simple way. Does that make sense? But the principle is the same. So that's there. So sometimes it's thought of, well, we have a kind of like the temple life, the sadhana, and then we have our own lifestyle. But it's supposed to be sadhana is lifestyle. Cleanliness is lifestyle. Right? It means I wash my feet after coming out of the toilet in the temple before going into the deity room, but I should also be washing my feet after I come out of the toilet in my own house, because I do have deities in my house. I do cook for the deities in my house. So maybe it's not, I don't make 7 offerings a day, I don't, you know, but it's still worship of the deity. So the principle of cleanliness is the principle of not mixing prasad and boga. Are the same. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that the idea that the child's not Brahminical, no, it's that everybody can learn these principles, but it only makes it becomes attractive when its importance is brought out. Right? That's the difficulty. That we see the culture's lost because the importance of it is only sentimental. Why do you do this? Oh, because my parents do that. They can't tell you why, you should, you know, intellectually, why it should be done, or metaphysically, or even sentimentally, but what its basis is. You know? So, you know, they can't say, well, my parents do that, but, you know, the cleanliness and all that, so I like to do it. Okay, that's nice, because you like to maintain relations, but the cleanliness also creates the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness, relationships function better. You know, so if the house is pure, then even your mundane elements of the interactions will be of better quality. Because the more, if the house is contaminated, the mode of ignorance comes. Mode of ignorance means the interaction cannot be of good quality. It can't. Like that. It's guaranteed. One can say, no, it's going fine. No, it's not. That's a bluff. It's a bluff. You know, you hear all the time, well, I don't do all that. I'm going fine. It's a bluff. I call it a bluff. Where is it going fine? Right. One family's saying, oh, we don't bother with Garbadon. Our kids came out all right. Their family is spread all over the world. And they suffer. They are mentally distressed people because they don't know how to interact. Simply because they, you know, laissez-faire about, you know, how I feel is great. That's it. I'm not joking. Right now we're on three continents, the same family. We're talking nuclear family here. We're not talking extended. We're just talking nuclear, three continents. And even that changes every couple of months, who's where and which part of the planet. You know what I'm saying? So it's a bluff. But, of course, you can't feel completely distressed, otherwise you can't function. So you have to find some way to make yourself feel good. So all we're saying is don't make yourself feel good at the expense of the Vedic literatures and the recommendations of the acharyas. That's my point. It means you have to create some veneer over, you know, economics and family life. You know, just to be inspired to be involved in it. Because desires are there, you have to deal with them. So it's the intelligent thing to do is to engage them. It's not intelligent to ignore them. It's intelligent to engage them. So therefore, would you know how to engage them? Unless we turn to the scriptures. You know, and as given to us by, here, a complete progressive march on their turn path back home, back to Godhead, will depend on the instructions of the revealed scriptures directed by a realized devotee. Right? A complete progressive march. So we can say, well, I'm progressing. Yeah, we're progressing. But a complete progressive march. Not just part. Okay. You're doing great. You're chanting. You're doing your sankirtan and all that. But because of the anxieties of family life, now the wife doesn't even chant anymore. You know, the kids are out of the town. Then you've worked so hard, collected hundreds of thousands of dollars and so many hours of, you know, I mean, gallons of blood and anxiety to raise these kids, and now they're just like every other, you know, Joe on the street. You know? Yeah. So, you can't feel great. You know? So, Prabhupada's talking about complete. So why can't it be there? So therefore that's why it says the instructions of the revealed scriptures. We can't get away from the scriptures. We have to be intelligent. We have to apply it. This is where pragmatism comes in. So pragmatism is a glorious thing if it's connected to this, the instructions of the revealed scriptures as given by the acharyas. Then taking that which is theory and using your intelligence and endeavor and making it practical, for yourself, and especially even more if you can make it practical for others, that's perfection. That's what we're looking for. But to try to use that pragmatism, which is called pratyaksha, you know, or, you know, observation of the senses, without shabda, without authority of the scriptures and the guru, it's useless. You know, because people are perfecting their economics now, but they've been doing that for a long time. You would say, oh, my family life works great. But I mean, the family life was working hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago. So what's special? You know what I'm saying? What's the big deal? So, and you've taken your whole life. You're telling me this, so I got it together, but I do notice you're 50 years old. Vedic culture, you would be doing what you're doing now when you were 20. You know? Why is it only now at 50? Your family is getting the quality time they deserve. Why weren't they getting that when you were 20? So that's the point. So where is that going to come from? It doesn't come out of any book that I know of that's published by anybody other than Vyasadeva, you know, or someone following in pursuit of that. Right? These books, self-help books, are written by 50-year-old men, right? And the ones who are successful at practicing them are also that age. Great, finally someone's getting it together. Good, nice. Vedic culture means it should be practical, it should work. But all they're trying to do is focus, right, endeavor, and dependence upon a higher principle. They'll leave out the higher principle, they'll throw in detachment. You know, have patience, have tolerance. And in that way, they'll get the element of that. And they're successful. Why? But, you know, that's what they're trying to teach. But that's what the Vedic literature is trying to teach. The Mahabharata is teaching that, and that's the lower level. Bhagavatam's making focus on God, endeavor to please God, depend upon his mercy in that endeavor. Does that make some sense? That will then make it work. So therefore, it's like this. Okay, now raising a child. Well, what Krishna conscious values? At the end of the day, what Krishna conscious values do you want your children to have? Like that. You can think about it already. If you want to write them down, but get it down. These are the values they should have. These are the qualities they should have. These are the endeavors or activities that we would like them to see. That's why we've had the children, right? We didn't have the children just so they could grow up, you know, and be potheads. That wasn't why we had children like that. We had children because the ideal of Krishna conscious, carrying on the tradition, and so many things like that. So, as an exercise, you can try sitting down and just writing down everything. You know, what are the values that they're going to base on? What are the qualities they need for that? What are the activities they're going to do? You know, whatever generic, whatever specific. Once you've written that all down and you're very satisfied it's complete, then one by one go through those and have an explanation of why they should have it. You have an explanation? No, let's say take two things. One, do you do that? Right? And do you have an explanation why either you want to be doing that or you are doing that? And if those two things are there, your kids will do it. And if you don't have it, then you have the recipe for disaster. Yeah. Like that. In other words, no chance. Like that. You know, it's not just because I said, because the scriptures don't. Because if it's just like that, then we just have this, like, very small one page. God says, surrender unto me. Plus, you don't need anything else. It's clear, it's very simple. You know, that's all. We're not this body, we're the soul, so therefore get it together and surrender. But all that's there because of the affection to try to get it through. If we just say, just do as I say, just as I said, then we're dealing with the mind and the ego there. We're not using intelligence. Ego because it's identity. I am who I am. I don't know. I never thought about it. Or it's too much for me to think about it. Another aspect is identity, the child's mind, which mind does what I want it to do. It just automatically does what I think it should do, you know, because it's just unspoken. I think we talked about this another day. Did I speak here about the unspoken? Speaking the unspoken. Is that here? Or is that over there? That was over there. Okay, it wasn't here. Means in relationships, you'll find that when you're dealing here, when we talk about the intellectual and the emotional, when you're dealing with somebody and interacting on the platform of rasa, then you always present the field and establish the relationship between you and the person you're talking to, or included in others, whoever's there, but who you're talking to, the relationship must be understood. Then, once the field is clear, they're comfortable in the relationship, then you explain the point you want to say. You know? Does that make sense? Because if you use the intellectual, where you come with your point first, generally you don't get to the field, because it's already turned into a nuclear war. You know? Like that. You always just say, you always do that, it's so annoying. Right there, it's a fight. But if you start with, you know, we have, you know, we're here, we're doing these activities, we're cooperating here together, and therefore, you know, I'm, you know, doing, you know, things to please you, it's reciprocal, things like this, but then when this activity comes up, I just don't understand it because, you know, it's like, you know, I feel very either distressed or disappointed with this kind of interaction, and, you know, like that, then you'll take it more seriously. Right? In other words, where we're dealing in the field of mind, you have to use the presentation of the mind. When you're dealing with intellect, you have to use the presentation of intellect. Just like in class, you say, any questions? Who appreciates the 5 minute, you know, well, you know, when I was in here, and there's a new devotee, then we were in this temple, and then it was like this, and that, and all over, and it goes on for 5 minutes, and then finally they say what they want to say. At best. Right? Nobody appreciates it. So in the same way as when you're interacting with somebody, the pure intellectual approach without considering the relationship, no one appreciates either. Right? Now, if we look at this, just step back, generally the tendency is the men will use the intellectual approach, you know, hey, I just gotta, you know, clear this up, get down to this, you know, I'm not standing for this, I'm gonna make my stand, and all these things. Never works. You know, sounds great when he's alone and talking with the boys. Yeah, yeah, you know, so just tell him. It never works. And then, you know, because the women, it doesn't make any sense because there's no emotion to it. There's no a relationship mentioned. It comes after, but you've already, it's already created the environment of disturbed, so you can't discuss it anymore. And then the opposite than women is always, you got to do this and that in a 2-hour discussion to simply say that this lady annoys me. Right? The man figured it out in the first 30 seconds. Guaranteed. If he's stupid, give him a minute. But because it's coming from the mind, you say, I have a problem. The man switches it to intelligence. So therefore, what's the problem? Clear statement of purpose is there, and then, okay, then we can do this. No. But it's a problem that's an experience, so it's mind, so therefore you have to give the whole background. Then, if the guy's tolerant enough, she will get to it and she will state it. Generally, the men aren't tolerant enough or humble enough. Therefore, they don't make it through the 5 to 45 minute, you know, presentation like that. Because generally, in the process, the lady will work it out herself, because by the end she gets to it, the intelligence becomes applied, and then she works it out herself. And, oh, thank you so much, such a great conversation. I understand what's going on. Okay, so therefore you can see is that humility and tolerance and respect and not expecting respect, if that's not there, it won't work. Those four have to be applied simultaneously in this situation. So therefore, you can't get varnashram about it. That makes some sense. Okay, that was a tangent on a tangent on a tangent. Okay, that was the mind and all that. Then, where did we get from the mind? We're making these two presentations. So not knowing the difference between these two presentations, generally you'll find all stress in relationships is based on that. Where it should have been an intellectual presentation, it was an emotional. Where it should have been emotional, it was intellectual. You know? It means they both are the same, it's just which end you start from. You start from the point, then you create the field, you start from the field, and then bring it to the point. They're both valid, but it's just you have to know what to apply where. Like that. So when emotions are involved, you use the method of the mind. When it's intellectual, you use the intelligence. right? Because the intelligence must get down to the platform of ourselves and applying in my life. At the same time as my life should have some meaning that I can explain by intelligence, right? We're supposed to be intelligent beings. Does that make sense? So then, we got into that from, that was an explanation of something else. Anyone remembers to something else? That's a problem, at least. So, explaining to the kids. So in other words, the sense of ownership. So now we're dealing with mind here. So what becomes disturbed is the relationship becomes disturbed. The kid doesn't do what I feel they should be doing. So that means that they're not actually the kid that I imagine my kid is. So then it starts to break down fearful that the situation as I see it is not there, therefore the relationship as I understand it is not there. So we become fearful. And then fear is in the realm of control. So then immediately the control comes up that, because I said it, you got to do it. But actually, if you just use the intelligence, it's just a matter of, they just ask you a question. Why? Because they don't expect that, because they're yours. They're, of course, understand you means all that, you know, discussion before, they already know, even though you didn't tell them. It doesn't make sense, but whatever. Everybody feels like that. But intellectually, it's you, what you state, the other person knows. Does that make sense? So that comes up. So if you yourself have contemplated it and practiced it, therefore when the kid asks about it, that's on a lower level than what you're functioning. That's not Shravana. They've simply asked the question. But you're on the level of Manana or Nididhyasana, where you contemplate it, you practice it, and you possibly come to realization. So that's easy. It's just like if you know, geometry, trigonometry, if the kid asks something in arithmetic, you're comfortable. Or even if they ask in algebra, you're comfortable. Because you're on a higher level. But if you don't think and contemplate, you just experience, then when they ask something intellectual, it throws it out of the realm of relationship, and one's lost. And so then it turns into a whole big thing, because the kids are just saying, I don't do it because the parents can't explain it. It doesn't make any sense. It's stupid. If you ask the kids why they don't do what the parents do, that's generally why. It doesn't make any sense, or why should I do it? They say the same thing that they ask the parents. But if someone explained to them why they should be doing it, what's the value of it, what's the profit and loss involved, like that. In other words, if you're doing it brahminical, then it's similar, the scriptures say this is the way, this is the benefits of it, and that, like that. The kshatriya, this is the correct, proper thing, this is the right thing to do. The Vaishya is you do this and things will go correctly for you. You don't do it and things will go badly for you. Because economics is based on religious principles. Like that. It means artha is based on dharma. You don't do the dharma, there is no artha. You know what I'm saying? So you simply adjust slightly the presentation for the audience, but it's the same thing. Still, the instructions based on real scriptures as given by the devotees. It's still the same thing, but just you slightly adjust it for the three varnas. Does that make some sense? Like that. Okay, is that okay? Yes. Means it's how you say? Good to hear?
No.
Okay, so Mataji's mentioning is that she's found her realization of the situation where the kid's not following. She finds it is self-centered. It's herself. She's going to be sad by this. And there's something there that she's going to lose out on. Therefore, she's feeling bad about it. It's not really about the kid. It's about herself. So in saying this, actually, that's very, how do you say it? Very brave, like that. The natural reaction of some others may be, oh, just see, so self-centered, like that. But it's actually this exact position that everybody's in. It's just a matter of who's willing to acknowledge it or not. Because the point is we have the kids, it's I want to have the kid. The kid didn't come up. We're not looking at the situation like Ganga Devi and the Vasus, where they come up to her and say, hey, we got to be born in the material world, I mean down on earth, so could you be our mother? And then she goes, okay, no problem. You know, and they work it all out beforehand, you know, who gets thrown in the Ganga, who doesn't get thrown in the Ganga, all that kind of stuff, you know. Like that. Here it's that I want a child, you know, for whatever reason, you know, for security or for just interrelationship or, you know, that feeling of, you know, how you say, like just adultness, you know, or, you know, it means the list is quite there, but they're all valid points. That's why the living entity is here, like that. It is that whole gamut of aspects of the parental rasa. So realizing that, then you see is, okay, I have that, that's my inspiration to be involved, but it's going to be successful when I include the child in the equation, like that. Because they also, strangely enough, have the same worldview, completely self-centered, you know, like that. You know, I remember, yeah, you know, it's good. Everybody can remember situations like that. So then that's what the Varnashram is describing, what it is that a parent is looking for, therefore, what are their duties and what can they expect. In other words, the parent can expect respect from the child because they are taking care of them. But at the same time, is with that, there's all kinds of, there's one whole aspect, one section is just on tolerance. And basically it boils down to that everybody in your whole family you gotta tolerate. And if you can do this, you conquer the material world. If you can't, you'll be bound up. Because each one in your family is connected to a section of the universe. And like that, and by tolerating all the insanity that's there, you conquer that aspect of the universe. So that means you're not affected by the influence that part of the universe has on you. So we're talking, here we're just thinking, you know, the macro. The micro is the macro, but, you know, it's actually the macro is the macro, the micro is the micro. And so that if you understand, you conquer the macro by performance of the duties. So everything has its balance. You know, it's just like, let's say, the wife follows the husband, but the balance is the husband's going somewhere. Otherwise you can't follow. You know, if two people are standing in one place, you don't say, she's following him. He's walking and she's walking behind him, you say, that's following. You know what I'm saying? So everything has like that. You know, it has. You know, he means the husband is the one who makes the standards, the decisions, but at the same time, it's his duty to please the wife. The wife's not pleased, he hasn't succeeded at all. Manu says, if you can't please women, don't get involved. You know, it's just like if you don't know how to deal with dynamite, and that don't deal with it, you're just going to get blown up. So if you don't know how to deal with women, don't get involved. Because you may think, oh, if I displease this one woman, then maybe I'll have trouble. No, she's displeased, your whole family can be destroyed. Example is given to Draupadi. You know, one woman being destroyed, I mean distraught, destroyed the whole dynasty, not just the person, not just, it wasn't just Dushasana or Karna or Duryodhana, it was all his brothers. Right? And they were just sitting there. So that's the point. The volatility is so great that if you're not willing to follow the rules, it's just, if you're not willing to please them, don't get involved with them. But at the same time, as things go what he says. So this is the balance. So the difficulty would come is that we try to apply Varnashram by using the art of the Bhutanyaya. I like this half, but the other half I don't take. So generally what you see is the men the men know all the duties, the half of the chicken, of the duties that the wife should be performed as service to the man. They know all that. But if you ask them, well, what are you supposed to do for the woman, you'll draw a blank. And opposite, if you ask the women, what are the things that the men are supposed to do, they can give you a big, long list. But you say, what are you supposed to do? Then, same thing. But the Vedic system recommends the opposite. The woman should know all the things she's supposed to do, and the man should know all the things he's supposed to do. Then it works. If I work for myself, you work for yourself, then there's a good chance we only get part done what we want. But if one party works for the other party full and the other party works for you, then you both get what you want. Then both get 100%. You go this way, both get less, plus it's rivalry. So that's the difference between humans and tribals. Does that make sense? So it's very, we appreciate your courageousness in revealing this point, but factually, that's the way the whole world is. The underlying aspect, when we're trying to disconnect ourselves with the material world, then these techniques of the mercenariness of our approach to the material energy is always brought to the forefront. This is the Upanishads. This is Vedanta. It always destroys that. So that's used by the brahmacharis, the vanaprasthas, the sannyasis. But that's intellectually applied, and for those who are not dealing in the field of women, you don't have to use very much. It's very minimal that you have to use that mental platform. But when you add the social system, when you add the family unit, then at that point, then the element of rasa, you know, the social interaction, must be brought in. At that point, then you use the element of the piety. Does that make some sense? Means the